Okay, I'm actually here pinch hitting for Robin Nicholson Valdez. Vasquez, rather. She was a dissertation student of mine at the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine. Turn the next. I will talk about a little bit of disclosure here. So about a week ago, she sent me her presentation slides. She couldn't make it, but she said, Dr. Godin, I'll give you the slides. So about a week ago, I got 137 slides for the hour and a half presentations. I said, no, it's an hour and a half session. We have other panel, you know, other people on the panel. And the other disclosure I'd like to make is that for the very first time in my career, and I've been doing this for a long time, my family is here today to actually witness this event. And you know what? It's easier to talk on the West Coast, completely blow it, and go back to your hometown. And never, ever, I'm never, but these faces I'm going to see, you know, throughout my lifetime. So if I pass out, don't worry, my family will take me to the nearest medical center. We know that the Hispanic population, Latino population is growing in the United States, 13% of the U.S. population with the U.S. Census. It's continuing to grow. Out in where I teach in East Stroudsburg University, which is Northeast Pennsylvania, U.S. Census was like 6% minority in the county, 2000. The 2006 update, that's now 13% of the entire county population, predominantly Hispanic. A lot of immigrant coming from actually Puerto Rico and the Caribbean islands, being on the East Coast. But this the bottom of the slide here shows that our projections by 2015, 25%, one in four people in the United States will be Latino, and in California, where you know this conference is taking place, we're looking at 50%. So this slide here gets at epidemiology with regard to DSM-IV disorders and help seeking. And for those of you who don't know this, about one in two people actually will have a diagnosable disorder in their lifetime. Yet the majority of folks actually do not seek professional help for their mental health disorders. And there's some ethnicity differences with regard to this. We see that the white Caucasian population is more likely to seek mental health services, with African-American blacks coming in second and Latinos coming in last in terms of the major ethnic groups in the United States. The other thing that we see with Latino immigrants is a tremendous amount of stress. When you look at Vegas study at the bottom bullet there, Mexican immigrants that met the DSM-III, this is back in 1999, criteria, a little over 15% sought professional services as compared to about 38% for U.S.-born Mexican Americans. So clearly an issue. New immigrants less likely to seek services. Next slide. This particular slide here talks about the prevalence of psychological issues in the Latino immigrant population. If you look through those slides, you're going to see, I'll summarize it for you, a lot of stress and anxiety that they experience, a lot of psychosocial issues, adjustment and assimilation issues, and this is more apparent in those that have spent less time in the United States. I know that, you know, I've done a lot of moving in my life. I actually lived in Southern California as a college student, went to Chicago, went to New Jersey for my first job, Chicago for graduate school, and just being able to assimilate into the Midwest from California to the Northeast from the Midwest. And so folks coming from different countries of origin coming into the United States, and if they're not documented, it becomes even more stressful. So lots of psychological issues going on with the immigrant population. Next slide. So immigrants, and it's not just Latinos, it's actually we're experiencing a very large increase, although it's dropped with our economic crisis. But over the last decade, we've received a huge increase in terms of immigrants coming into this country. Some people talk about that as a way of importing our middle class, so to speak. But immigrants bring with them belief systems about mental illness. I know that my wife is Irish Catholic, so if she's experiencing stress of anxiety, it's because that she's sinned against God. And do you want to talk about it? Yes, I do. I'll go pray to God. So very common in the Irish Catholics to be very private about their emotional issues and not really willing to reveal or to discuss what's going on with them. With regard to the Latino population, a lot of stigma that's attached to mental illness, a lot of feeling of being weak as a person in terms of if I need to seek help, that's an admittment you're admitting to yourself that and to your family and friends that you're too weak to deal with your issues on your own. Now there's what is called culture-bound syndromes. Next slide. And you folks can help me. Help me in the room here. Ataque de nervios.
Yeah.
Okay. Uncontrollable behavior such as shouting, crying, some aggression, and it's a lot of times triggered by the death of a family member. It's just essentially somebody that is out of control. This is one particular type of description, if you will, of a mental illness that's common in the Latino population. Next slide. Susto, something that speakers feel when they're actually, right? It's like a traumatic event that where the soul leaves the body. It's very similar to post-traumatic stress disorder. Where the symptoms include, appetite and sleep disturbance and sadness and lack of motivation, a lot of somatic complaints, stomach aches, headaches, diarrhea. And traditional treatment actually is, the focus of treatment is to bring the soul back to the body. And if you've had a, panic attack, for example, you know that one of the common symptoms of a panic attack is actually depersonalization, where you actually feel, see yourself talking or see yourself in the situation, but yet you feel like your actual consciousness is outside the body. So it's interesting that we have a name, Asusto, for that. And then the next one is Locura. It's interesting that... After we did this study, this particular term was now being used to describe not only patients but some of the faculty in the psychology department. But La Cura is essentially the best descriptor for that is schizophrenic symptoms where you have essentially severe or chronic psychosis, and they're attributing this to. Either it's inherited or there's life difficulties or a combination of both, which is not too far away from our research that demonstrates that, nature-nurture issue with regard to schizophrenia. So those are the culture-bound issues. Now, the purpose of the study was to look at the knowledge and beliefs, really mental health literacy, specific mental disorders, and the ones that we looked at was depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, and stress. Now, stress being just normal, everyday stress that we encounter amongst Latino immigrants. And we wanted to see whether or not the length of time in the United States, as well as the ability to speak English, somehow mediated or had an influence on the Latino's ability to be able to be mentally health literate. So, next slide. So what is literacy? And this is actually how I got involved. I'm very much interested in health literacy. I do cancer health literacy, disease management health literacy. Mental health literacy is where you're able to gather information about a specific issue that you're dealing with. Let's say it's anxiety. You gather up mental health information. You're able to recognize the signs and symptoms as well as the precursors, as well as, what are the factors that influence your anxiety. And then part of also mental health literacy would then be how can you engage in self-help, at least initially, and then if this particular problem gets worse, where do you go for the right help? And where in the neighborhood, what types of mental health professionals would you seek? Okay. So our participants were 179 Latino immigrants. They were all adults, and they were working in the forestry industry down in Georgia, the rock quarry in Montrose, New York, and a farmer's market. But the farmer's market was really migrant farm workers. Essentially, a lot of the jobs there were crop picking. And we had some difficulty with, we got a pretty good return rate on our survey, about 80%, but we still didn't have enough numbers. So we also solicited participation from people living in the group dwellings of those working at Garcia's Farmers Market in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So, next slide. So one of the challenges in collecting data from Latino immigrants, and some of which are non-documented Latino immigrants, is being able to, how do you go about collecting data? And, you know, the kiss of death is bringing a clipboard to the location where then once they see paper and a clipboard, they know your government, and then you're not going to have any participation. So what we did was is we were able to get one of the four, not the foreman. We initially talked about foreman, thought that would not be a good idea. We got a key informant or someone who within that community was well respected and liked, and encouraged them to be the liaison who would encourage the other individuals to participate in the study. And so once we established that trust, we got a real good participation rate, about 80%. Okay, so next slide. So we have this mental health literacy survey that was really came from Anthony Jorm, who's in Australia. Actually, this whole literacy research originated in Australia and Canada, and it has actually immigrated. That field of research has immigrated to the United States now. The second bullet there, what we looked at was age, gender, ability to speak English, and we had cannot speak any English, can speak some English, but cannot speak in sentences, just specific words. And then the third is fluent in both English and Spanish. We also looked at length of time in the U.S., the country of origin, and the highest grade completed in school. Then they were given a vignette. Did I bring it with me? Maybe not. Thought I did. But I wanted to just share with you. Okay, well, found it. Here, I'm going to give you like a depression vignette. So the participants were given this vignette, and we randomized the gender of the vignette. So I have Maria or John as a 30-year-old. They've been feeling unusually sad and miserable for the last few weeks, even though he or she is tired all the time and has trouble. There's a typo here. The person is tired all the time and has trouble sleeping every night. Maria and John don't feel like eating, he or she's lost weight. He or she can't make up their mind on their work and keeps putting their decisions off. Even day-to-day tasks become too difficult for them. This has come to the attention of Maria and John's boss, who's concerned about his or her lower work productivity. And so when you look at the DSM-4 criteria for major depression, that fits when you look at these life experiences. And so we had these types of vignettes for depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, and stress. So these are the questions that we then asked once they read the vignette. What is essentially wrong with the person? From a list of 15 possible choices, and then what is the best possible help that this individual could receive? Okay, next slide. So in terms of our demographic characteristics, which I feel has an impact in our overall findings, this is a young population with a mean age of 30, predominantly male, that has to do with the forestry industry and the quarries. I guess you folks can see that. 43% said that they only spoke Spanish, another 41% spoke Spanish in some English, and then about 17% said that they spoke Spanish and English fluently. Now, they came from all different types of countries, with the most common being Honduras and Mexico, and then it was really a mix of other folks from Nicaragua, El Salvador, and then 7% other, and they were coming from a variety of different countries. Now, the mean time in the U.S., which was sort of disappointing when we found this, because we thought we would get a different types of distribution with regard to how much time spent in the United States. The mean is about 5 years, so these are folks that are not necessarily new immigrants, although the mode was 24 months, which is essentially 2 years. The education, the mean was sixth grade education, and the range was from no formal education or schooling to 1 year post high school. Okay, now our results. How am I doing on time? 10 minutes? Okay, about half done. So with the results, Interesting, we found that the Latino immigrants, 47% of them provided a correct diagnosis. Now, what is a correct diagnosis? If they if they endorsed depression or even endorsed sadness or melancholy, if they endorsed any of those things that got at depression, that was considered a correct response. And have down here in the finer print, you know, 17%. For those that didn't get it right, 17% indicated some psychological or emotional problem, which was not specific enough. I mean, sure, it was a psychological emotional problem, but it certainly wasn't. We wanted them to be more specific, like indicate that they're sadness or depression. 11% indicated anxiety. And then some others indicated the culture-bound syndromes. And that actually, when you took a look at who endorsed the culture-bound syndrome, 26% of those that spoke only Spanish endorsed the culture-bound syndrome. So that was consistent with our hypotheses, thinking that if you're not assimilated into the culture and you're not speaking the language, that they're more likely to be aculturalized, if that's such a word. Okay. Now the next slide is very disturbing. I'm sorry. The next with schizophrenia, which is pretty easy. I mean, the symptoms are so severe that you would expect that people would see this as being, you know, something's very wrong with this individual. Only 2% of the Latinos were able to provide the correct diagnosis. And where they went wrong was they indicated that this person was depressed or this person was anxious. And with all the culture-bound syndromes, 52% of those that spoke only Spanish endorsed some of the culture-bound syndromes. Okay, next slide. Generalized anxiety, only 14%. Indicated the correct diagnosis here. For those that got it wrong, 21% indicated stress, and 19% indicated depression. And then we had 9% indicating ataque de nervios. But there was no relationship between time spent in the United States or English fluency with their endorsements of these wrong answers. And then with the stress, 40% provided the correct diagnosis here, and no relationship whatsoever. If they didn't get it right, it was really a mix all over the place. These are some of the more common. It was really spread out quite a bit with stress. Okay, so next slide. We asked them, now that that you've read this vignette and you've indicated what their problem is, what is the best type of help that they should receive? And we had an ordinal scale where, you know, some people, you know, one of my graduate degrees is in community psychology, and sometimes, you know, when you are trained in community psychology, it's sometimes the best help is not the more formalized official help that we're all supposed to tell people. So, you know, maybe it's best that you seek friends or seek family for help. So I'm sticking to the more traditional medical modeled approach here, if you will. And for major depression, the most appropriate with an ordinal scale of 1 would be seeing a psychologist or a psychiatrist. We rated medical doctor as appropriate. And there's quite a few folks depressed in this country, and their first place to go is to see their primary care physician. And that's okay, and a lot of our PPO HMO models say that that's how we have to do it. But the recommendation that should be made in the doctor's office is, okay, I can prescribe a medication, then I'd like to refer you to a mental health provider, because outcome studies show that the combination of both types of treatments are the most effective. And then what would be not appropriate would be talking with friends and families. Now, to seek help with major depression, that may be helpful, but it's certainly not going to be, I mean, it's really a crapshoot, if you will. It's sometimes your best friends and families may not be the most helpful in terms of helping you get through depression. They actually can make things worse. So the other thing that we found was time in the U.S. and the ability to select the correct diagnosis. There was a correlation between those two, because the ordinal scale is flipped. So that's why we have a negative R score. Okay. Next one up is schizophrenia, and We had 37% of the participants endorse the correct or the most appropriate mental health provider to treat schizophrenia. Here, interestingly enough, I mean, schizophrenia is a very severe mental disorder that requires professional help. And one-third of the population here that we studied said that the best help to receive is to talk to your friends and family. And that's a clear indication of low mental health literacy. With anxiety, next slide. With anxiety, 35%, about one in three people endorse the correct. I have down here the counselor. That was not most appropriate, but appropriate in the medical doctor. They did fairly well here. There was no relationship between time spent in the United States and English fluency on their endorsement of what help to receive for anxiety. And then with stress, 2 minutes, okay. Okay, it's interesting now with stress, probably not best to see a formal mental health provider, best to talk to friends and family or talk to clergy. So one in four people indicated that it's best to seek friends and family there. I'm rushing here now. And then the others being counselor and psychologist, medical doctor. And the more time spent in the United States, the more appropriate the type of help. All right, so I'm going to flip through. This right here was getting at something. Just go right to summary and discussion. So with depression, we had about one in two, almost 50% correctly identified this disorder. Now, what's interesting with depression is, and this came through qualitatively, when the participants were filling out the survey, they indicated that, oh, this sounds like me, or this sounds like something I had. So they could definitely relate to the depression vignette. And a statistical trend was found where less fluency in English was related to greater selection or culture-bound syndromes, and the less more time spent with the appropriate help-seeking behavior. Big problem with being able to identify schizophrenia. Next slide. And we have a problem also, I'm going to just go, next slide, problem also with anxiety, being able to identify that. And then the last slide, they did fairly well with identifying normal stress, everyday type of stress. And again, a lot of the participants identified with this particular vignette in exit interviews after the survey. They said that reminds me of things that I've gone through. So in a nutshell, I mean, what is the study? Organizations, agencies that are working with the Latino population need to find ways in order to be able to educate the Latino immigrants with regard to the most common types of DSM-4 disorders. I think that can best be done through population models, whether it be social marketing strategies or media advocacy strategies that would reach out to the Latino population. That would obviously, these strategies would need to be culturally sensitive and be able to help Latinos understand what these disorders are, what are the self-help strategies, what are the ways in which where in their communities can they seek help and be able to effectively deal with these disorders. That's it. Thank you. Okay.